Yeah, I was trying to get a screen share set up here, but I couldn't find one that
worked out all that well.
Would work for a public meeting, yeah.
Actually, this, I don't think both of them together is going to take all that long. Especially by phone, it's just more awkward.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, that's a good point. The second meeting I've placed at...
Oh, yeah?
So...
All right. I'm going to screw around for a bit and then come back, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, because we can't start the public meeting earlier. We can only start it...
and I guess we could have just said, like, 11 o'clock, and then we could go to one and go back to the other. That would probably get us in trouble, too.
And I guess the second meeting... So you'll run this first commission meeting. I'll manage the second meeting.
And I'm insulted. I could get used to it, actually.
Yeah. I don't foresee any issues. The second meeting, I'm not sure how to introduce the SORA comments, but Paul has sent me a document of written public comment on NACs.
How many pages?
Two pages.
Okay, which is just pretty quick thing. If anyone got any problem with it?
Yeah, okay.
I liked his first issue or first edition of their newsletter. It was a good start
right there.
And I kept hammering him, make sure RTP's in this loop and whatever grant stuff you do is eligible for that pool.
Okay. Yeah, I think they've met with Heather. She's still there.
Yeah, I think she'll probably still play that day.
People are trickling in. Commissioner Booth will not be joining this meeting.
I was going to say, too, you know, Kevin.
I haven't heard from Kevin either.
For a few meetings, actually.
Yeah. Going on three now.
Do I argue that the conservation group is not that engaged?
Right.
Plus or minus there. You know. You could have another Karen in there or something.
Yeah. So I did, I've been talking to Karen Boger, just making sure she's aware.
Yeah.
She's done. She's working with Eddie to, like, communicate written comments.
I think that's all that she really wants to be, is have a finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should give it a shot. We're still a minute early.
A couple minutes early here.
Okay.
But maybe take a roll call of all the commissioners.
Oh, yeah,
nine. And then I guess I can start and just ask everybody to, like, mute their phones when they're not talking and be sure to, like, state their name before they start.
So we have any idea of making some good minutes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can hear you guys. This is Commissioner Fell.
All right, Philip. Glad you could make it.
Yeah. Snuck in under the wire.
Yeah. It's all right. You made it. Excellent. Should we start? All right. Well, might as well get started. This is the meeting of the Commission on Off-Highway Vehicles, Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. At 9 a.m., call the meeting to order. We'll do the roll call of the commission members. Commissioner McKay is here. Commissioner Baker?
Here.
Mr. Baker here. Commissioner Malone?
Here.
Mr. Malone's here. Great. Commissioner Cox? Not quite yet. Commissioner Hill?
Here.
Bell is here. Commissioner Parks?
Here.
Okay, Commissioner Booth? Not here. Commissioner Giroux? Okay. Well, the good news is we still have a quorum. So, just a little housekeeping thing is, if you're not talking, if you can mute your phone so we can limit the background noise. Other than that, it'd be better to see all of you in person, obviously, but the way things are, I guess we'll have to wait till our next meeting. So, also state your name when you make a comment, so it'll be easier on the minutes to have those accurately reflect what was said and by who. So, public comment. This is a time for public comment on the phone. Is there anyone on the phone that wants to give public comment?
This is Charlie Cox. I just joined the meeting.
Oh, Charlie, great. Glad to see you here. Okay.
Hey, Commissioner McKay. This is also Miles Gertler from the BLM. Just wanted to let you know I'm in on here.
Good. All right. Thanks for coming on there. All right.
One clarifying point. Do we have Craig Burkett on the line? Okay. And what about Dominique Etchegoyen?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you can't let that stop us. I'll call for public comment one more time. Is there any public comment on the phone?
Hey, Greg. This is Laura Hendrickson from Las Vegas.
Good, Laura. All right.
Hey. Good morning. I have, I guess I wish I had an advertising update for you guys, but I just really wanted to chime in and see if there's any type of messaging that the commission wanted to put out during this time. So you don't. So I just wanted to let you, throw that idea out there. If you guys want to relay any messages through Nikhil, I know people are offloading. I know people also can't register their vehicles. So it's kind of, with the DMV being closed in Carson City. So any ideas that you have for any type of messaging that you want to put out during this time? We can still do Facebook ads or run radio ads. So just keep that in mind and let me know. So I'll just mute myself and have a great meeting, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Laura. Okay. We received no public comment on the phone, so we'll move on to item number 4, the review and approval of the agenda. Does anyone have any issues with the agenda? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I would make a motion. This is Sue Baker.
Okay.
I would make a motion
Baker.
To approve the agenda.
And a second?
Commissioner Parks, I'll second.
Okay, Commissioner Parks will second. Great. Moved and seconded. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none, then I'll call for a vote. All those in favor of approving the agenda as posted, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposition? Very well. Agenda is approved as presented. Item number 5 is the review and approval of the March 11, 2020 minutes for possible action. Any discussions, corrections, additions?
Mr. Baker, I'd make a motion to approve the minutes of March 11th, 2020.
Okay. Motions, and do we have a second?
Commissioner Malone, I'll second.
Commissioner Malone seconds. Very well. Any other discussion, questions, comments on it? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the March 11, 2020 minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Any objections?
Chair McKay, this is Commissioner Hill, and I just wanted to let you know I'm abstaining from this since I was not at the last meeting.
Okay. That's fair. All right. Thank you, Commissioner Malone.
Actually, Commissioner Hill on that one.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Hill. Sorry about that. All right. The approval of the minutes stands. And item number 6 is the grant project update. It's the Green Mountain Trail Maintenance and Equipment Purchase for Possible Action. And Kevin Dose of GBI will provide some options to purchase a mini excavator using OHV grant funding and OHV projects. So either Kevin or Nikhil can start this conversation.
Hi, Commissioner McKay, this is Kevin Dose, Deputy Director for Great Basin Institute. As you all are aware, we have been working on a memorandum of understanding that would be between the Nevada Off-Highway Vehicle Commission and Vehicle Program, Great Basin Institute, and the U.S. Forest Service Humboldt-Tioga National Forest. Nikhil, were you able to get a copy of that signed MOU to the commissioners prior to the meeting?
Yeah, Kevin, so, and for everybody on the line, all of the meeting documents are provided at ohv.nv.gov/meetings, and they can also be accessed really just online. Does any, it's under the commissions tab, and then scroll all the way down to the bottom, you've got May 13, 2020 commission meeting and NAC workshop. This MOU that's signed by the Forest and by Great Basin Institute is uploaded as a supporting document there.
So yeah, it's posted.
So Commissioner McKay, this is Kevin Dose, and I wanted to just highlight a few things on the Memorandum of Understanding. First and foremost, you'll notice it has been signed by the Forest Supervisor, William Dunkelberger, and myself as the representatives for the U.S. Forest Service and GBI. Probably the most significant point that I want to make regarding this MOU is that there were some Department of Agriculture policies that are going to prevent the current use of the equipment, one, by anybody other than a trained U.S. Forest Service operator for liability reasons, and two, that right now they only have the mechanism to work on federal lands. For example, if an enthusiast group from Southern Nevada wanted to partner with the Bureau of Land Management to do a new trail construction or trail maintenance project, they could in turn engage the U.S. Forest Service to participate in that project, and the U.S. Forest Service would have the mechanism in place to work on BLM lands with their equipment. However, under the current MOU, if an enthusiast group, let's say in Gardnerville, wanted to go work on state lands or private lands, they would not have the ability to partner and utilize that equipment. So it is emphasized in there that the equipment can be used with partnership on federal lands.
Okay.
This is Commissioner Baker.
Go ahead, Sue.
I was just wondering, I think that that's fine. I think the agreement looks good, but I'm wondering, with that partnership with another federal agency, is there an opportunity to allow the BLM staff person who's trained on it to use it, or does it just have to be the Forest Service, and how is that going to limit the actual ability? Because the wording looks good, like we're going to share, but I'm just remembering from our last meeting something about over a year to schedule the worker. It seemed like, how are we ever going to in reality make this work? So could you just address that?
Yes. Commissioner Baker, this is Kevin Dose with Great Basin Institute, and I believe Sierra Brewer with the U.S. Forest Service Humboldt Toby should be on the line. So I'll address first, and then Sierra, if you are there and want to fill in, you can do so. But again, from a liability perspective, the operator of the machine must be a U.S. Forest Service employee. How does that impact the implementation of the project? Right now, Commissioner Baker, the Forest Service basically is in the process of developing work plans for the next fiscal year. And so with the awards of grants not coming out until December or January, the probability that the work plan for that coming field season, let's say June, July, August, September, that there is ability for that project to be input is low, because they are planning that work plan well in advance. I think the Forest has said, though, you know, it is dependent on the work plan flexibility. So if they have the ability to put it in there, they will. But what they can absolutely commit to would be the following field season. And it really just comes down to the timing of when the grant awards are happening versus when the work plans for the upcoming field season are completed. So I think worst case scenario is that timeline you mentioned, but best case scenario is that there would be some flexibility and they'd be able to work it in. Sierra, I don't know if you're on, if you wanted to add to that.
I guess she does.
Hey, Kevin, this is Miles from the BLM. So just to be clear, we couldn't have BLM employees go attend a U.S. Forest Service operator training and then be certified to operate this piece of equipment?
Miles, this is Kevin Dose. Yes, that is my current understanding.
Okay.
Now, that's my current understanding.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
This is Commissioner Cox.
Go ahead, Charlie.
So if this machine sits idle for a year waiting for the next go-round of grants, would the Forest Service use it for any other projects, or would they use it for OHV trails that they thought needed maintenance?
Commissioner Cox, this is Kevin Dose with Great Basin Institute. I have been working with Nikhil Narkede regarding the current project log that's on the books and ready to go, and also with the Forest Service on their work plan for 2020. So with respect to currently, there is enough work on the books to support the use of this equipment on commission-sponsored projects, and in fact, Green Mountain being one of them out in Harrison Pass outside of Elko. I think you raise a really great question that I personally can't answer, but I would like to get you an answer, unless there is a rep from the Forest Service that wants to speak to that. But I think it's an excellent question, and I'd like to get you a response to that.
That'd be great.
So this is Kevin Dose with Great Basin Institute. Nikhil, can I get an email to you that you can then distribute to the commissioners?
Yes, Kevin, that works for me. And Commissioner Cox, to add to that, we already have a number of Forest Service projects that we've already that the commission has already granted funds towards that we can start working on this year instead of waiting the 18 months. Those grants are already on the ground and they should be in the Forest Service's work plan already. to use this equipment.
Okay, because I was unclear on that, if they were already some in the work plan.
Yeah, if you recall, I think it was in 2019, so end of 2018, the Forest Service State Office was granted, looks like almost $78,000 to maintain routes on Wheeler Pass Road up on Peavine, the north side of Peavine, and I believe there was one more trail in the Spring Mountains area that's slated for maintenance this year.
Commissioner Cox, this is Kevin Dotes with Great Basin Institute. I will emphasize in my email, not only answering your question about future use, but I will ask the Forest Service to comment on what's in the current 2020 work plan.
That's good. I guess one concern I had was, are they able to use it on non-motorized trails? Would they be using this equipment that we purchased for other use other than motorized recreation?
Commissioner Cox, this is Kevin Dose. I will make sure we answer that third question for you as well. Given what I know about the equipment, I think non-motorized trails, would be hard to use it, but I'm certain there's probably scenarios where that is possible. So I will make sure that we address that. And
I'm not saying I'm against them using it, but I would just kind of like to know if they do, as a commission, what our machinery is being used for.
Understood. Understood.
This is Commissioner Malone.
Go ahead, Kevin.
So under Section E, Subsection 3, I just want to be clear that the Forest Service is open to using this piece of equipment to work on other federal trail systems, such as, you know, those operated and maintained by BLM. Anybody answer that?
Hang on,
Commissioner Malone, I apologize. I was on mute. This is Kevin Dose. You are correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Commissioner Baker?
Questions, comments?
Commissioner Baker?
Yeah, go ahead, Sue.
I see that the last paragraph, G, does say that the agreement could be reviewed annually to make sure that it's fulfilling its purpose. So I'm sort of thinking, I like it. I think you guys did a great job trying to make it, ensure that the equipment's getting used as, to its fullest. And I think the only thing that would be of more benefit would be like what the BLM folks said, if it's federal employees being trained on it, seems like there's a better likelihood of the equipment getting used to its fullest if more than just the Forest Service operator could use it. And since they're both federal agents, that doesn't seem like a big stretch. So I'm just thinking if that could be looked into for a future amendment. And if it can't, I'm still comfortable with this, but I think I would be even more comfortable if that could be a future amendment, but I wouldn't want to hold up supporting it today. That's just sort of my feeling.
Good point. We can do that.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Fowle. I have a couple general comments, and I continue to not support this. I don't think state OHV funds should be used to purchase machinery that can only be used on federal land and cannot be used on state land. That, to me, doesn't seem like a proper use of state funds. And I just think it's too convoluted of a system to have a user enthusiast group to be able to access this machine, you know, and here we're having to pay out of grant funds or third-party funds to the Forest Service to use and pay for an operator on a machine that we purchased. So it just seems like a lot of money is going to help the Forest Service and going to pay for Forest Service employees on potentially state-funded projects that can't be used on state land. I don't like it.
Okay, good point.
This is Kevin Dose with Great Basin Institute. It's a great point, and I would like to state that the Forest Service is very hopeful that one thing that's happened recently is that there has been an MOU between state agencies and federal agencies to collaborate on the good of the state. I think that had a big driver behind that was wildfire and wildfire prevention and support. The Forest Service has come forward to say we want to support state projects as well. We just have to allow the agreement process to catch up with the memorandum of understanding that was signed last year between the state and the feds. So I am also hopeful that that will be a future amendment, that we would see the use of that equipment transferring over to state lands, because I think it's you raise a great point. I also just wanted to briefly comment that, you know, while the Forest Service is requesting that the equipment be operated only by their employees, see if I get any feedback. Okay. I was just going to say that I think the one thing that we're getting here is experienced, trained labor at what would be against a market value, very fair rates. For bringing a trained operator in on a piece of equipment like this, if we were to go outside of the federal realm, we might be paying higher prices for that. So I do think in the long run, when we look at implementing these projects for the good of the OHV community, that's something that should be considered. But I do want to know, I want the commission to know that the Forest Service is very interested in or very wants to see the collaboration on state lands. They just currently can't do it because of regulations that are in place.
Commissioner Malone.
Go ahead, Kevin.
So, Commissioner Fell, I know in the last meeting I agreed with you 100%. I also oppose this. However, and understanding that the government owns, 81% of the land in Nevada, and it is land that our constituents frequent on their OHVs, I kind of tend to support it more now. And, I was out over the weekend, and I saw probably about, at least five or six groups, no less than, 10 to 15 machines each out cruising around, on nothing but, BLM and Forest Service controlled land. So I can kind of get behind this now.
Commissioner Fell here. Like, I think you made a great point. It's on BLM land. If it was, it would sit a little bit better if it was easier for the BLM and Forest Service to work together to use the BLM operator that has gone to the Forest Service training, like Miles asked, like that would be much easier. But I just, in the real world, I don't see if we're using this machine to full potential, it's pretty much being used all week, almost all year. I don't see the Forest Service having operators that they can send full-time around the state on other other land managers. Like, I don't see that working. We also have the gray area of if it's setting idle because we can't get a Forest Service personnel to, you know, break free and go use it at a different part of the state on BLM land. If they are using it, as Commissioner Cox asked, on non-motorized trails, like maybe, you know, doing some infrastructure work on a hiking trail, does the OHV Commission get any sort of a rental fee in return from other user groups, non-OHV user groups using this machine? It sounds like they could be using it, but do we get some sort of a rental fee for it? There's a lot of stuff that I think can be taken advantage of this outside the OHV scope and not full benefit for the OHV community when most of our land in Nevada is that we recreate on is BLM.
Good points.
Yes, valid points.
We need to improve, you know, every year as we renew the agreement. So,
yes. Hey, Commissioner Fell, this is Nikhil. I'll jump in to a couple of points that were mentioned here. Will the equipment sit idle if there's no OHV projects? The way this agreement is written, if we don't give the forest a list of OHV projects that we need the equipment on, then we do risk letting it be used for non-motorized projects. The Forest Service has that liberty. And then, so that's why it's kind of important that we're looking into the future as well as our current grant projects to say, okay, Forest, like this is where we need this piece of equipment. And that should help the Forest kind of prioritize or work through where that equipment will be and how many operators they need. So I guess the key here is to just make sure that we have a long list of OHV trail projects and that the Forest is aware of those so that they can plan accordingly for those, like, 18 or so months. And then the way this is written, it can be used on federal lands only. So, yeah, we can't use it within state parks. And just to be clear, yeah, we'd have to look into other sources of equipment if we're going to be working on state lands, like at the Walker River Recreation Area or anywhere there. But right now, we don't have any projects that are only on state land.
Commissioner Fell here. So who's on the OHV Commission side, who's going to be coordinating with the grantees and the Forest Service to make the calendar, you know, over the next year and prioritize who gets access to the machine, where the machine's going? I mean, that seems a pretty big role to coordinate that sort of effort.
Yes, definitely. So another item on our agenda today is to discuss program caseload, and I think that working with the Forest Service would fall under my position currently to like prioritize these different projects. When we talk about the program's caseload, we can talk about finding somebody to like better coordinate those kinds of activities.
This is Commissioner Baker.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead, Sue.
Sorry. And Commissioner Fell, you know what? I'm on board with you. But this is how I'm justifying this is that, you know, we also have on the agenda for additional personnel, and that whole program for the volunteer coordinator that works with the groups. We own the equipment. We get the certified volunteer operators, or our own staff is certified as an operator. I mean, that's my goal for the future. We own the equipment. We rent it. We put it as part of the grant. You know, we don't have to rent anymore. We don't have to buy stuff anymore. But we're just not quite there yet. We already have these approved projects on the Forest Service land that we know for the next year the equipment can get utilized for, I think it's 3 or 4 trails. And then if we can coordinate so that the BLM staff can also be allowed to use it in the future, that'll get us another year. And then maybe by year 2 or 3, we've got our own volunteer program up and running, and we can modify this agreement to get the equipment back, or even if we would have paid to rent it, you know, it might have expended the funds of the purchase, and when, as we move forward, we buy new equipment and we keep it in-house as part of our volunteer package. So that's in my mind why I'm okay with this now, just because it gets some projects going and it might be the equivalent of the rental. And then in the future, we own the equipment with our volunteer coordinator, and then we're not limited with what the use of the equipment is. So that's my take on things.
Very good. Who was the other speaker that wanted to comment?
This was Miles from the BLM, and she just spoke directly to what I was the question I was going to ask, so I don't have a question anymore.
Okay, thanks, Miles. Any other comments, questions? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Excuse me. Probably a. I'll entertain a motion to approve the MOU between the GBI Forest Service and the OHV Mission.
As it's written.
So I'll need someone to make that motion.
This is Commissioner Cox. I would make that motion.
Okay. Charlie's a first. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Baker, I'll second.
Very good. Moved and seconded. Any further questions or discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition?
Commissioner Fell opposes.
Very good. Thank you, Philip. Motion's approved. Thanks, everyone. Good discussion. And we'll make the future agreements better and work towards doing it ourselves. So, item number 7. The statewide ATV safety courses for possible action. Sue Baker, Vice Chair, will propose options to create a statewide safety training aimed at the youth ATV operations. Details to be discussed and pursued by the OHV Commission include incentives, funding options, partnerships, and course content. So, Sue, why don't you go ahead and present your proposal?
This is Commissioner Baker, and it's been a longstanding goal for me to try to do something to help with the non-licensed users of OHVs. And in talking with the outdoor school and seeing what great services they already offer, and then seeing the national program, I would just like to see it modified a little bit and then see it be a requirement. I think when we are working with the towns and counties and we're trying to encourage and promote and are excited when each one of them evaluates if they could be an OHV-friendly community, one of the valid concerns that comes up in each one of these communities is, you know, 13-year-olds driving down the street with a car right behind them or beside them, and what education have they had with regard to, you know, safety in the roadway, and are the parents doing an adequate job before they let their kid jump on that four-wheeler and go down the road? And I think it would just be of benefit if we could, one, have a program where the class allows the kids to ride the machine that they're riding. Right now, you can only be formally certified if you're on an age-appropriate vehicle. And most of these 13, 14, 15-year-olds are too big for the smaller vehicle and are definitely riding the machines that are currently, you know, now for 16 and above. And the outdoor school said that they could create their own program, which almost mimicked the federal program, but lifted that requirement for the age-appropriate machine so they could get certified. And then I just feel like it would be better from the perspective of each one of the towns when they're evaluating if they want to become an OHV-friendly community, if we had that state-mandated training course, if the kids want to ride in the right way. Maybe not for the trails, maybe for the trails. I don't know. So I haven't flushed out, you know, what is the priorities, but I just know, you know, do kids even know to use their basic hand signals on an ATV that doesn't have the signals when they're driving down the road? You know, are they being taught the considerations of, you know, approaching a hill and that type of thing? So I just think it would be a nice thing for us to do. Mandatory or not mandatory, I don't know. I'm interested in the rest of the commission's feelings on that. And then the whole thing with age-appropriate and not age-appropriate, because from the outdoor school, they're saying most of the kids can take the class but can't get certified because they can't offer the machine. The kids have to come with their machine, and most of them don't have age-appropriate. So I just was welcoming the discussion about that, and as we're moving forward with our regulations, it seemed like a perfect fit to have this be a component of it if we were all, you know, on the same page with regard to what we wanted to support.
Very good.
That's the end of my presentation.
Okay. What do the other commissioners think about it being voluntary or mandatory?
Okay, perfect. I'll put a note on your file then. Okay, well,
this is Commissioner Malone. I don't know how it would be enforced. We already have a lot of law enforcement. Music, but you know, a lot of law enforcement in the state already struggle to enforce what Chapter 490 has already. So mm-hmm. I don't know how we could enforce the size restrictions. Because, I mean, you know, when you look at a machine now, I mean, that sticker on there that says it's for 16 and up or for whatever age and up, I mean, that's just the manufacturer's recommendation to, you know, help them out liability-wise. I don't really know how other people would enforce that.
Okay, very good. Other opinions?
Okay, well, this is Commissioner Baker, and I just wanted to mention that when I was a kid growing up back east, snowmobiles were a big thing, and if you wanted to ride on a trail, if you wanted to ride on your own property, you could do whatever you want, but if you wanted to ride on a trail and you didn't have a driver's license and you were under 16, you had to take this course, and it was offered through the 4-H. And, you know, I don't know that from the enforcement side of things, that was a priority, but it was a known, and the kids, you know, a lot of the kids just did it because it was being offered and it was available. So I envisioned a similar kind of thing, and that's why I'm not sure that it would be mandatory, but for us to be promoting a safety course through the cooperative extension statewide and encouraging it, to me, I think now the only thing that's being offered is, you know, the small impact that the outdoor school can have. Plus, you know, if you buy a new vehicle, you get that little safety video, which I'm not sure who watches and who doesn't. But I just think it's an extra level of education, an opportunity for the kids. And I think if we do partner with the cooperative extension and try to get that word out that it's something that kids can learn from, it's all positive. That's just my thought.
Okay. So it sounds like being mandatory might be a problem, but it might be something that we can offer, and maybe if it's successful enough in the future, they can make it mandatory.
So
this is Commissioner Cox.
All right. Go ahead, Charlie.
I thought Nevada had a law, if you were under 14, you had to take a rider safety course.
Right.
I am not aware of that law.
This is Commissioner Malone, nor am I, but I will look right quick.
Sure.
This is Commissioner Fell.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's something to consider. The implementation, I can see running into hurdles, and especially enforcement, as Commissioner Malone alluded to. But as we're pushing smaller rural communities to put in place OHV traffic or OHV travel routes through their towns, you know, it's something I've personally never considered because I don't have children. But yeah, if we have 14-year-old kids riding a dirt bike, you know, with their family to town, I think we need to look at some sort of a certification. I don't really think make it mandatory on trails, but if you're on these OHV travel routes, I think we should have something that ensures people that don't have driver's license know the rules of the road and can follow the rules of the road. So I like the thought and the effort Sue's put into this.
Okay. Other comments?
So this is Commissioner Malone again. So, Charlie, the answer to your question is NRS states children under 16 operating off-highway vehicles must be supervised by an adult. It doesn't say they cannot ride them.
Okay.
I have one comment on this. This is Nikhil. We could think of other incentives for this type of safety course. So two items. Number one, does this OHV commission want to tackle this ATV use that's occurring on roads? Like Commissioner Fell mentioned, the course might not be required if you're operating on trails, but this is more focused for use on roads and communities. And then the second incentive item would be maybe we could offer them like a registration for the first year, and we'll pay that out of the OHV program if the student comes in and completes that safety course. So we've listed this item for possible action, and I guess I'm just looking for clarification if we should try and pursue this like statewide safety course, what the incentives would be, and some of these other details, like what would be included in course content. Would it be operating on OHV trails and that those ins and outs, as well as operation on roads, or would it just be for in-city use?
Any thoughts on that? And I think maybe incentives, they might get a break on insurance if they were operating a thing, you know, it might probably be a little discount or something, and they might be able to ride at a lower age on streets if they had this safety certification.
So I guess if we make it a statewide requirement, then we're also impacting like law enforcement agencies. If we try and give insurance breaks, we've got to deal with insurance companies. My thought for offering just 1 year registration for anybody that attends and passes the course would be, number one, we capture like personal information so that we can get renewals, presumably, on the second year of that equipment. And then number two, it just keeps everything kind of nice and tidy within this program. We're not really impacting law enforcement by asking them to patrol for this certification, and we're not impacting, I don't know how we give insurance breaks or anything like that.
Well, I don't think we can make it mandatory, at least at this point, and that would get around most of those issues, but I think to offer this, and for the smarter ones that took it, it certainly couldn't hurt them any.
Well, you know, and it's obvious I support it. I mean, I'm the one that started it up in Humboldt County, and, you know, we've had a lot of really good success with it. You know, we've had a lot of calls during this quarantine period, people begging us to hold classes, and we can socially isolate doing these classes just to get their kids out of the house and give them something to do. So the interest is there. If it's here, if it's there in Humboldt County, it's got to be there around the state. So, I mean, I do wholeheartedly support the course.
Well, where should we take this? Should we form a smaller committee to flesh out some of these details and bring it back to the commission at our next meeting?
Mr. Commissioner Baker, you know, I really would value the input of the outdoor school because I think the program should encompass everything. I think it's totally great to have it just be voluntary, not mandatory. And I liked what Kevin said is like, I don't know that we need to offer an incentive for, you know, reduced or free registration the first year. Let's just, to me, I think having the program, having it be that you can get a certificate and not be age-appropriate machine and that we just throw it out there with the ask of the cooperative extension to see if they would implement in their 4-H programs and just run with it, you know, for the next couple of years to see how we are. And then if we want to make it be a mandate through the state or something, you know, that's a future thing. But for now, just to get it out there, get it so that you can get fully certified and get it that you can do that on a not with the age appropriate, to me seems like a good start.
Okay. Well, do you think maybe yourself and Commissioner Malone and work with Melanie from the outdoor school, kind of put some more detail on this and come back to us at our next meeting?
I'm willing to do that.
Yes, so am I, and I'm actually texting Melanie now.
Okay. Does that work for the rest of the group? We can make it in form of a motion, so it's all legal. Yeah.
This is Commissioner Cox. I'd make that motion.
Okay. That will form a committee consisting of Commissioner Baker, Commissioner Malone, and with assistance from Nevada Outdoor School to come back to our next meeting and present more details on a statewide ATV e-safety course program. So
yes.
Charlie made that motion. You agreeable to that verbiage there, Charlie?
Yes, I am.
Okay, do we have a second?
Commissioner Fell seconds.
Okay.
Sure, Fell second. Okay, moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 And any opposed? Very well. Thanks very much, Sue and Kevin, for presenting this. Okay. Item number 8 is the OHV program update for discussion. Nikhil will update the commission on program activities during 2020. Out-of-state OHV registration rules and regulations, out-of-state reciprocity, suggestions to make the Nevada OHV registration easier to obtain, Nevada Administrative Code proposed revisions, an update on NRS challenges, the 2020 OHV Summit proposals, an update on program caseload will be discussed. So I'll leave this up to you, Nikhil.
Okay. Yeah, so no real supporting document for this item, no PowerPoint or anything. I tried to list a whole bunch of different subjects that we talked about during the last meeting so that we can kind of open everything up for discussion. Since our March 11th meeting, I've been working on just making sure all of our 18 projects are active. We received our first round of reimbursement requests for these projects, and then all of our 2019 projects needed to be reimbursed at the end of April. So cataloging that kind of information, or those reports, and then paying out grants. on other items, you guys have seen the administrative code that's being proposed for amendments, and we'll have that meeting this afternoon. But if there's any kind of discussion that we need to have on those NAC changes, please let me know. And then we're also talking about some NRS challenges. So when we're having these discussions about administrative code and proposing changes there related to grants management and registrations, some things can't be done through NAC. So we're kind of making a list of what we want to change in NRS. That's up for discussion today as well. And then our OHV summit proposals. I'm really kind of struggling to stay on top of a number of these tasks, so I've asked that Holly and the Nevada Mapping Collaborative kind of takes the lead on this year's OHV summit. I also thought that last year was kind of a repeat from what we did in Ely, so hopefully having like our fresh field crew coordinate this one will kind of bring some new blood into that event. We are leaning towards hosting the event in Winnemucca just because we have a number of active OHV projects. We've been talking with a number of stakeholders, I guess, since our last summit down in Caliente to host one in Winnemucca this year. Now, the site isn't locked in just yet. We're tossing around the idea of hosting it at the, I believe there's a Winnemucca Convention Center or something similar to that that Holly's working on reserving. We haven't actually gone out there to see it, but trying to tie in with some local contacts there for more information on it. If you guys have any ideas for this 2020 OHV Summit, send them my way. But right now we're looking at the dates of October 8 and 9 for that, for the at least the discussion side of the event, and then a big ride on the 10th on that Saturday. I guess something that we noted from last year is a lot of the discussions kind of they go on for a long period of time, so we're trying to keep the discussions limited to the morning half of those days, and then have like some kind of field activity in the afternoon. Throwing around the ideas of like either trail work classes, something like best management practice type workshop of managing an OHV area, just anything to get attendees outside. And then a update on program caseloads. So we've had a number of tasks going on through, I guess, since our last commission meeting. And what's really falling off the edge here is I'm trying to stay on top of these grants and these NAC changes. Those are the two big items on my desk, but we're falling off on like social media and keeping up with like public comments or taking public comments and cataloging them correctly. So I don't know. I guess I'm looking for some guidance. What do you guys want to see published to social media, kind of along the lines of what Laura's comment was this morning? And then how often do you guys want to see some social media kind of going out from our office? Because we really haven't done that in quarter two here.
Well, it seems pretty obvious. This is Greg McKay for the record, that the grants and the NAC are the primary push at this time of the year. As far as the social media and the public comments, you know, if that has to take a back seat, or you can redelegate some to Laura or get some input from others to help on that, we could help you.
Yeah. So actually we have a collection of new media. So Laura's put together, you know, project-specific or grant-specific videos, and they're all available on our YouTube website, our YouTube channel, but I don't think we're using that investment to its full potential, right? It's just sitting on YouTube when we can be playing them at I don't know, public events or just sharing them with other media outlets.
It'd be nice to get them out to TV, short, you know, free advertising about your OHV dollars at work.
And, yeah.
Probably get a little paper TV input, I guess, okay. Wouldn't hurt.
Okay.
But, yeah, and Facebook's probably where most of that activity does, mm-hmm. So
we can,
how we share
with
that.
Yeah.
But
this is Commissioner Feld. Do we?
Yeah. Go ahead, Philip.
Do we have any sort of Instagram, like hashtags or anything? Because a lot of times when I'll be out trying to, you know, tag Nevada OHV, you know, use any sort of hashtags that I can think of, there's nothing really, I guess, uniform that we're using to tag events in. You know, I think that would help quite a bit, because if you just Instagram tag Nevada OHV, I think there's like fewer than 100 posts and probably 40 of them are mine, you know, or OHV Nevada, Nevada OHV, any of those type of hashtags. I don't think we're really using as much as we should.
Okay. So I'm kind of going to channel the social media discussion over to Laura. Do you think that's, I'll ask Laura to look into what a good hashtag would be. I think I'll also have to get clarification on how DCNR interacts with this. Maybe we can encourage like a bunch of users to start tagging NVOHV on some items, even at group events and things like that. I don't 100% know if I've got any restrictions. Can I just What can I tag with DCNR's name that says NVOHV as well? There might be something.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is Laura from, if I can chime in here really quick, Laura Hendrickson with MXT Media in Las Vegas. So just in regards to social media advertising, like on Facebook and Instagram, I love the use of hashtags, that idea. We have to, we are under the umbrella of DCNR as a program. So we don't have a separate Facebook page and we don't have a separate Instagram account. We did at one time, but those are now defunct. And so literally all of our social media needs to run through DCNR. But I do think that generating our own hashtags, and maybe if we just circle back and do let everybody know about the other grant programs, and then we get people sharing them, like ask local clubs to share them on their social media accounts as well, we could really generate, like, you know, good publicity. And also, we can write a press release and run it through DCNR to submit to local news stations, because I think everybody's looking for some feel-good stories right now. We were able to capture, I think it was at the end of February, the Reno area dirt riders did a cleanup, and that we have that video that we were able to capture. So I think that, you know, I like the idea of generating free publicity. So those are my couple of comments, but we do have to work collaboratively with DCNR before putting out any messaging. And I'm happy, Nikhil, to help with any type of social media. You know, Sam and the public information officer is great to work with.
Yeah, I know, Laura. Thank you. Thanks for touching base with me like every other week during this quarantine. But yeah, I guess it's an area where I'm just not 100% sure what to publish and where to publish it. A few days ago, maybe a couple weeks ago now, something circulated to my desk about Quiet Warrior Racing and their, like, four, you know, like an action plan of whether you should ride or not. It's like a document that came from the public, but I don't know if that's a relevant thing to share. I personally opted not to share it because, you know, we don't have, like, the shelter-in-place orders, and then it kind of seems to go from check your rules and regulations all the way to, like, carrying toilet paper and treading lightly. Not so much discussion about actual writing. So I guess I just chose not to share it.
Okay.
Yeah, so social media is kind of a struggle right now. An update on program caseload. So, yeah, that's kind of a fancy way to say that we've got, like, a lot of work within the program. We've got, what, almost 3 years of grants that either need to be closed out or reimbursed and tracked. So that's a large part of my workload, but then we got to talk about how we can grow this program. So right now with a number of, well, with budget discussions and things like that going on, I guess my goal this year, I think, well, instead of saying it's my goal, I think it would be prudent if we started looking at other grant funds to bring more money into the state OHV program. So something along the lines of submitting an application to the Rec Trails program and asking for, you know, funding to go maybe help out volunteer trail work days with some, like, employed trail workers. But I guess we need to figure out a way to not just be spending OHV registration money, maybe within the program finding other sources of funding to help pay for, like, additional positions and things like that. As far as what those other two positions would look like, I know that I've been talking about, like, a volunteer coordinator or an OHV ambassador coordinator, something along those lines would be one item. And then anywhere else that the commission would like to see our program expand into, we can have that discussion as well. But, yeah, I guess... originally, or the first year, I was really trying to work on getting a hold of the financials and grant reimbursements. This year, we're tacking on NAC and NRS rewrites on there. And I think the additional positions should be focused on, like, improving OHV experiences around the state there. So I guess that's my update on those different items. Somewhere in here, well, yeah, out-of-state reciprocity and out-of-state OHV registration rules and regulations. I've got a running document of, like, Arizona OHVs or how Arizona manages OHVs under Article 20, as well as, like, how Utah manages OHVs under Title 41, Chapter 22. I haven't included it as a supporting document because I don't think it's ready for your guys' review.
So, Mr. Chairman McKay, for the record, we still have reciprocity with California. Because we don't have reciprocity anymore with... It may not be something we have to address right away, but there's probably plus and minuses to go in each way on that. You know, Utah, of course, they're 35 years ahead of us. They expect, their estimates are $4 million more a year by not having reciprocity. We have a California reciprocity, which, A, we ride in California a bit, but B, they sell a lot of California OHV registrations and Nevada residents. So it's something to think about. We could discuss it in our NAC hearing this afternoon, too, I suppose.
What additional positions does the commission want to see as part of this program? And what do you prefer that we keep... operating through grants? So, you know, SOAR is a newly formed agency that's kind of bridging that volunteer coordinator gap. And then we've got the Mapping Collaborative, which is hosted by Great Basin Institute. How many future positions would you want to see staying in the grants realm versus coming into the state agency? I guess our preference is to keep the state employees kind of trimmed down and then do as much as we can through grants because it shows that the money is going back out into the community, not just being spent at DCNR. we should look at other grant funds for positions within DCNR.
Okay. Any comments? Questions?
This is Commissioner Baker.
Now go ahead, Susan.
I think it's interesting that you that your idea would be to look for other funds to support our program. I don't think we've actually ever done that before, with the exception of partnering with the State Parks Grant, you know, to push project to more money. But I'm surprised to hear you say that you would want to keep the state staff trimmed and put the money in the grant program or other grant programs that we could apply for. Because I mean, for me, I hate, and this is no offense to Great Basin Institute, and they've been a great partner, but I really believe we should have our own mapping person, because I see that that's always going to be a part of OHV, with the trails, the maps, the updates, you know, as new technology comes into play, how we get the trails out there. The whole idea of the users providing input to the, you know, get the dirt components, you know, that inquisitive, I can never remember what that presentation was, but I know you guys know what I'm talking about, where people can self-report stuff that's good.
I
see that's the way to go, and I think that we need to have our own state employee be the driver of that. And second thing is, you know, this whole discussion with the equipment to the Forest Service, the volunteer ambassador, coordinator, bringing all those user groups together, you know, having our own set of equipment in a trailer ready to go to maintain trails. And a person helping drive that, with the majority of the actual work being done by the volunteers but driven by a state employee. To me, I see that as a really good way to go. And in talking to the other states that already have that, that really just brings the OHV use to the forefront for everybody. So it's not only just that you get more trails maintained, you get more buy-in by the public, you get more media recognition because of it, because of the volunteers talking to other people, and then they know where stuff is going. So for me, those two positions, I think, are key to us growing our program, and I think it only can happen if there's state employees. That's how I feel.
Volunteer coordinator and an analyst. Okay.
Any other comments, suggestions out there?
Just a public comment from Robert Adams.
All right, go ahead, Robert.
Thank you. Just a quick comment on the OHV summit location. The Nevada Association of Conservation Districts met in Winnemucca last year. It's an excellent facility, and just a lot of in-house DNR from the conservation district side as far as setting it up.
Okay. Thank you. And I think Kevin's got a pretty intimate knowledge of Winnemucca and what they have to offer too. So,
absolutely. And I'm excited about putting together some. I have some friends who know probably about every inch of this county, and we're looking forward to putting some pretty good rides together.
How's the cricket situation out there?
They're horrible. Yeah, they're a lot thicker than they were last year and about 2 months earlier.
Mm, okay. All right. Are there any more comments on what Nikhil's proposing or putting out for thought as far as state positions that we might want versus grant-funded programs that we might want?
What about a timeline? Do you guys have a timeline in mind of the GIS analyst and a volunteer coordinator?
Well, can we can we use this NAC process, NRS process, to give us the ability to hire them, and whether it floats at that level or not is another topic, but at least it would give us the option legally if you wanted to do it. So we could try to throw it in the NAC or NRS or where it needs to be and see if it goes through or it gets kicked out.
Okay.
Does anyone have a problem with that? At least trying to float it and see what our elected representatives think of that idea.
This is Commissioner Cox.
Yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
So if we hire another employee, what, are they still housed in DNR, or are they working directly for us, and we have to come up with office space?
If we hire another employee, they would work under my direction, and they'd be a DCNR employee.
Okay. And then I didn't hear anything, and this is Commissioner Cox. I didn't hear anything in discussion of the timeline of pursuing an out-of-state registration with the legislature.
Yeah.
Like, is it too early to start on that?
I have a thought on it, but it's going to require a NRS change, and we don't have, like,
bill sponsor.
Yeah, there's no bill sponsor currently. We haven't discussed who would sponsor a new OE bill, and right now only NACs are proposed for changes. Our NRS states that if a machine's here for less than 15 days and it's registered in the resident's home state, then they don't need the Nevada registration.
If they have reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. And down here in Southern Nevada, with so many out-of-staters wintering here, it could be a good source of income because nobody enforces it's been here longer than 15 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have the idea that they'd have a separate out-of-state registration sticker, or would they just be required to purchase a Nevada OHV registration?
This Commissioner Cox, I think it's a separate out-of-state sticker.
Okay. I can pursue that. I can pursue it internally, but I'd encourage the commission as well to find a bill sponsor. We don't have that support right off the bat here. With a bill sponsor or somebody to carry this legislation, then I think that, yes, if everybody is open to it, we can open the NRS for revisions and tackle things like out-of-state registration.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Fell. So currently, like, if a state doesn't offer reciprocity, like Arizona, Utah, Idaho, and those residents come into Nevada, or they're wintering here, like Charlie said, but they're non-residents, how do they legally ride?
They don't.
But
yeah,
no enforcement.
We need to fix that. Yeah, we need to figure out a way to address that and fix that and get the revenue off of it. Other states are getting revenue from our residents recreating in their state.
I'm also going to just clarify that our NRS doesn't state reciprocity very clearly. It just says if the machine's registered in the home state, then it can be in Nevada and operated for not more than 15 days.
Okay.
So
then it is legal.
Yeah, we're allowing Utah to operate here, but we're not allowed to operate in Utah as it currently stands.
This, Commissioner Parks, I just want to reiterate what Commissioner Fell said. This is is a big deal when we have reciprocity with California. I truly believe, at least every time I go out on a trail in Nevada, I see way more California bikes than Nevada bikes, at least in the Minden-Gardnerville area. And we stand to get quite a bit of revenue from that. And, you know, I can buy a California sticker and put it on my bike and nobody knows that it's a Nevada bike. So we've got a lot to fix there.
So am I hearing that we would require a Nevada sticker to ride in Nevada, period?
I think that we need to do what California does, have a temporary sticker for out-of-staters to purchase at given locations, whether it's motorcycle shops or however we want to set that up. But mm-hmm. that's how California works, yes.
Okay.
This is Commissioner Malone. I agree 100% with Brian. I could get on board with just completely not having any type of reciprocity if the Nevada registration process was easier. It's not easy by any stretch of the means. I think that's one of the first things we need to tackle. And, you know, while we're tackling that, maybe we can also add in, you know, an out-of-state registration for no longer than, you know, 15 to 30 days or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
So out-of-state registration, whether annual or just temporary, that's going to require an NRS change. To the second point of making the registration easier to obtain, there are some things that we can do through administrative code. So right now, the registrations we're losing annual renewals, so people will register for the first time, but then either move or don't renew it, exactly. We're trying to fix that just by taking everything online, so the change to the NAC would just be making documents accepted online or by mail, and or by third party even. But that's the only thing that we're doing to make the registration easier is the ability to submit documents online, as well as your proof of your VIN inspection form. You can either have it inspected the old-fashioned way or send in a picture of your VIN or sign an affidavit certifying it. And that's similar to what Utah is doing with their online system. If the NACs do pass, then we'd need to figure out how to establish that like online store for people to complete the paperwork.
Would that allow us to have a third-party contractor do the whole process and get out of DMV?
So I don't know if we could remove DMV from this through NACs that will likely
okay.
require NRS.
Okay.
Commissioner Parks.
Go ahead, Commissioner Parks.
Let me add to that. Some options that might work would be a lifetime for a lengthier registration for Nevada residents. Instead of re-registering every year, you might find a lot of people would pay more to register for 5 years or et cetera. Something else to look at.
Okay, good idea.
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner Parks. I think there's a provision in our NAC to allow for multiple year registration, but I'm pulling it up right now.
Hello, this is Paul Quaid from SORA.
Hello, Paul. Go ahead.
Thank you. Real quickly, and this is more on the NAC administrative changes as well as NRS changes that we believe need to happen. We've prepared some comments for the NAC changes, and we certainly support the changes being proposed related to online registration. However, we believe there needs to be bigger changes to the NRS Chapter 490 that provides for a dual process, one for in-state registration, which obviously currently exists, but also for a Nevada use decal that would apply to out-of-state OHV users, racers, as well as registered vehicles pursuant to NRS 482, basically the Jeeps, Land Cruisers, and other type of vehicles that are on our OHV routes that are exempted from the OHV registration requirement. What we'd like to see is that use sticker that would apply to those groups, the out-of-staters, racers, and Jeepers, if you will, so that they are contributing to the OHV fund and would therefore have access for maintenance, stewardship, and other projects, and would be party to and invested in the OHV commission. We think that having that dual process may kill two birds with one stone and add to the coffers of the OHV commission.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
This is Commissioner
Baker.
Go ahead, Sue.
Paul, I'm wondering if your group has any recommendations with regard to the online and third-party versus DMV.
Yes. Obviously, DMV is written into the statutes. We view that process as cumbersome. With all due respect to that organization, and we believe that in the registration, in the first part of the process, DMV is going to be integral and part of that in moving forward. However, we believe that the use decals can be a simple process that we could use a third-party vendor as well as the retailers and the like, our private stakeholders, to disperse those decals and have online availability for those folks that are traveling from out of state so they could acquire those before or promote them going to our retailers and other businesses within the local communities. Because we think when they show up to get the OHV use decal, they'll also be spending money at the local businesses. So we'd like to, again, see that dual process.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Any other comments?
Public comment, Robert Adams.
Go ahead, Robert.
Okay, thank you. Pahrump's population grows by a third every winter, and a lot of them are OHVers, and they're all senior citizens that worry about staying within the bounds of the law, even though it's something that the likelihood of being cited for an OHV registration violation are pretty much equal to that of being struck by lightning. But they do ask how they can legally register, and they've got to go through the process, which is somewhat, well, what we're talking about, but yeah, this is something in the assembly from Pahrump, I'm sure would jump on board in sponsoring legislation to offer a quick and easy out-of-stater registration that would last for 3 or 4 months anyway. And it'd be great if it could be done online because we could go ahead and put that link on our tourism website that when people arrive here at their RV park that they'd already be set up and ready to go. And thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Robert. Any other comments?
This is Commissioner Malone.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, Mr. Quaid, if you're still on the line, I just want to ask you if you know of any elected representatives that would be willing to take bills like this forward.
We've been looking into that as we work on the legislative changes. I do have a couple people in mind that I think would carry the legislative changes because of the benefits to outdoor recreation. So I don't want to volunteer any names today, but I do have a couple folks in mind that I think we could get sign on and sponsor.
No, that's perfect. Good enough. Thank you.
All right.
Commissioner Parks, I just want to interject real quick that I also have a couple of state representatives that would sponsor this.
All right. Maybe everyone can forward their suggested maybe carriers of this legislation to Nikhil so we can coordinate on that.
If somebody else wants to take the lead on getting a legislator support on NRS changes, I'm open to that as well. Just keep us kind of in the loop of what changes to NRS 490 will be presented at the legislature, just so that we're not off guard here.
Paul Quaid again on behalf of SORA. We are working on our proposed legislative changes that we heard from the summit as well as some of the other meetings. We're coordinating that with the NAC changes that are being suggested now, and we fully intend to submit those to the commission and get input from the commission. We're hoping to be on the agenda next month, and ideally I'll have some proposed language to present and talk about at least subject matter areas for the commission's consideration. And happy to coordinate with other folks with proposed legislators that may sponsor or co-sponsor a bill.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes, thanks, Paul.
All right. Any other comments, suggestions? Okay. Shall I move on to item number nine? Item number nine is a call for agenda items and date for next meeting. So commissioners may at this time recommend agenda items, dates for the chairman for the next meeting. No deliberation or action will be taken on any information presented until the matter itself has been specifically included on the agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. So anyone want to throw out topics for next agenda first, and then we'll look at a date? Obviously,
Commissioner Powell?
C and NRS will be in there.
Yeah, so the next commission meeting, I thought, will be similar to today, where we'll hold a commission meeting in the morning and then the NAC workshop in the afternoon.
Program updates, obviously, I imagine, huh? Do you think we'll be ready for more discussion on the statewide youth safety course, an update?
I would expect yes.
Okay. Okay. Is that too early for announcement for this round of grants and criteria, or that's down the road some more?
Our next meeting's already in June.
Yeah, so we give them 3 or 4 months or whatever to do their grant. So we'll probably do a grant or next round grant announcement out there, and if there's any criteria we want to change or scoring we want to change?
Yeah. So the intent, you'll note some of our NAC items will form like a technical advisory committee and kind of amend the way that these grants are scored. So I guess the intent here is that the commission will still identify what the priorities should be. You know, like ranking, let's say law enforcement's weighted the heaviest this year, or maybe it's trail maintenance, et cetera. Similar to last year, that will remain the same. And then instead of all of the commissioners trying to add and subtract all of the scores that they rank, we'll have the technical advisory committee just provide you guys with a list of how those applications shook out. And then the commission, the intent would be that the commission can just pick and choose from that list of which grants to fund. And a checks and balances would be, let's say the advisory committee ranks a grant at the top of the list, but the commission does not choose to fund it, then we need to provide the public with an explanation of why that grant wasn't funded.
Yeah.
Okay. So the item for next meeting would be to identify how those grant priorities are weighted.
Okay. And maybe discuss how to simplify the scoring. We could probably take one column off of that without much trouble, I think. That's a pretty good shot for next one. Are there any other topics? Obviously, you can submit to Nikhil if something pops up here
right.
that you don't think of today.
So Sora has already reached out to be on the meeting agenda.
Better have the Sora update. Okay. Sora update. Okay, and that ties into NAC, NRF, and all the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, again, if you have any other topics, please forward it to Nikhil. Sooner rather than later, it's good. And what about a meeting date here? Do you have a suggestion time frame here?
Yeah, so I need to submit our final draft of NACs to the legislature by June 30th, and I believe talking with a few people earlier, they were throwing around the date of June 10 as the next meeting date.
Yeah.
That is coming up fast.
Yeah. How does June 10th look at first blush? It's the third Wednesday?
Second Wednesday,
excuse me.
Works for me.
Okay.
Is there a preference between June 10 and June 17? They're 1 week apart.
I think practically we better give you the...
I already had June 10th in my calendar, so I'm good.
Okay. Nobody's screaming it's a problem right now. Correct?
Commissioner Fell, I'm good with the other day.
Okay. Then we'll shoot for June 10th. Okay, excellent. Any other discussion on items there? Okay.
Hey, Nikhil, this is Commissioner Malone. Nikhil, I just forwarded you an email on it's a news article on a OHV rescue. If you would forward that to all the other commissioners, I would appreciate it. And I'd just like to... you know, bring up that, you know, it's rescues like that that you'll read about that why I think it's important to bring the search and rescue members up on or as being available to receive our grants.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you. I will forward this to the rest of the commissioners right now, and then I'll add a link of this website to the OHV program website.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Malone. This is Commissioner Fell. We've had a few in Washoe County actually recently too, where search and rescue had to evacuate some people. So yeah, it's something we for sure need to look at. Thanks for providing that.
That may be an NACNRS matter also to add that in the definition. Okay. Any other comments, suggestions? Okay. Now go to public comment. This is your second opportunity for public comment. And
Robert Adams.
Well, go ahead, Robert. Third time's a charm.
Okay. Thank you. As many of you know, I'm working with Nye County and the BLM on permanent designation of Southern Nye County Trails. And some in the BLM are asking for me to explain why some of the trails that I'm proposing are not on the OHV Commission map. Maybe a quick fix on this, maybe a OHV Commission disclaimer that maps in many areas are still a work in progress.
Sorry, Bob, who's asking about allowing some of the routes you're proposing on the maps? Is it BLM?
Well, I'm getting the information back through the RecTech, James Groft, but he's got people. In other words, I'm giving him the trails, and he's actually out riding one with us, and he's getting pushback from up the ladder that the trails that we are submitting are not on the OHV Commission map, and wanting an explanation why.
Yes. Hey, this is Miles from the BLM. If you could have James get in touch with me, and I'm happy to explain how this process works. You guys are doing nothing wrong. Just have him get in touch with me, and I can explain it all to him.
Okay. I appreciate that, Miles. I guess what I'm trying to do is these are existing routes. The area that we're mapping is travel limited to existing roads, trails, and dry washes. And some of the trails that we're submitting that are not on the commission map are actually Fish and Wildlife PBO routes. So basically the ISF checked them out, and they've been raced for years. So there's really no reason that we shouldn't be allowed to. I guess another way to ask it would be is how can we add these trails to the OHV Commission map?
Yep. Yeah, I'm happy to talk through all that with him. I understand what you're saying there.
Okay, I appreciate that. So I'll forward that, and James will have your email. No problem at all. Okay. Thank you, Miles.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Is there any other public comment out there? Okay. Then I'll close the public comment.
Oh,
go ahead. Nikhil's got one.
Sorry, if anybody else is on the line other than the OHV Commission, just FYI, we're going to have an NAC workshop this afternoon at 1 o'clock. The conference line will remain the same as this one, and a OHV notice of workshop, or sorry, notice of this OHV workshop, NAC workshop, is posted on the OHV website.
So, hopefully we'll see the rest of the commission and interested parties at 1 o'clock on the phone again. I thank you for your time, and we'll see you at 1 o'clock. So, got a motion to adjourn?
Commissioner Malone, all motion.
Second.
Commissioner Fell, second.
Mr. Fell, any discussion? Probably not. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any position? 1 o'clock. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, everyone.
We're sorry, your conference is ending now. Please hang up.